Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour. On this week's bonus episode, me and Melissa are going to review Moana, so I kind of already ruined it, but to my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Hello, Pete. And no music this week because we are just kind of doing this as a quickie bonus episode, but I do want to let you know that this episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel. For your vacation planning needs, visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, maybe visiting Aulani, so you can see a little closer some of the locales that are shown in Moana, head on over, visit the experts at meitravel.com, and Becky and her team can get you started on your own Hawaiian adventure, as it were. Who are we, though? We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. Over on Facebook, if you search for Disney Magic Hour, you can find our group. If you head on over to iTunes and leave a 5-star review, Melissa will read it for you, and I know we have some reviews to read at the end of this show. We're also available on Google Music Play, and you can find all of our episodes streamed across all your devices over at soundcloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And Melissa runs the Instagram, and where can they find that?
At Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
And there you go. So we are going to review Moana. I will let you know when we get into spoiler territory, even though I have a feeling a lot of people who are listening to this are going to see Moana or already have seen it over the next couple of days. But before we go to that, we did see this. Actually, we should say where we saw this because that was kind of unique.
Yeah.
We saw this as part of Destination D that we were at last weekend at the Contemporary as part of a D23 event. And we actually got to watch this while sitting on the beach at the Polynesian. Not the most comfortable chairs on earth, but it was a cool setup. And it kind of added to the, added to the flavor of everything, yeah. I thought.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk, though, first about the short that came before? Because a tradition that I'm so happy is back is, you know, the tradition of having a short before a feature film. And this one was cool.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was called Inner Workings, and it was a really cool animation style. It almost reminded me of like paper. Like, that's going to be a weird
thing. I know what you're talking about. It's sort of like if you had 5 sheets of paper that laid over each other.
Yeah.
And as you lifted it, it was, you know, like deeper and deeper into the scene.
Yeah.
Sort of like that.
Yeah.
You know, multiple layers, and you were able to flip them back and forth.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure that's a style that's in many, like, you know, children's books. Like, if they're discovering, like, the inner workings of a human, and you, like, lift the skin up, and then you lift the muscles, you know, it's like shows you each layer. And that's kind of what the short did. It showed you the inner workings, but we focused mainly on the characters, what his brain, his heart, his stomach
and lungs
and his bladder and kidneys
yeah. I don't want to say too much about it.
No. It's all about his inner workings. It's
yeah
cool.
Which, in an age where Inside Out just came out a couple of years ago, or last year, whenever that was, two years ago, this could have been like very retreading things that we just saw.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was a wholly original take on something that everyone will understand. And it was visually interesting. The style was fun.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was one of the better shorts that they've put out. And they just seem to be getting better and better. But who is the person behind it?
The director and screenplay writer was Leonardo Matsuda. And he was, this was his first directorial debut.
Good for him. Yeah. It was a hell of a debut.
Yeah. You always find that with the shorts. I feel like they're always like really, a lot of the shorts that are really good, they're most of the times one of the people's first, you know, and then sometimes from the shorts, they'll bounce off into something else.
And that's the real test, though. I mean, it's one thing to have a 5-minute or 3-minute short that's snappy and keeps your attention. It's a whole other thing to come up with something that's an hour and a half plus and keep that pace going and keep your attention running the whole time. But I mean, it's got to be crazy for him because he's playing in front of Moana, which, you know, is going to be massive. Yeah. Millions of people are going to see your short film, and that's just incredible.
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy when you like are told like you're going to get your short, but it's going to go in front of this movie, and then you're like, oh, okay.
Do you want to get into Moana though now?
Yeah, yeah. Just, I like the short. It was really great.
It was. It was really fun. And I look forward to seeing it in 3D actually. Because we saw this in 2D and it was great. And, well, kind of spoiler, I can't wait to see this movie again and in 3D. I want to see that. But we'll explain the whys to that, because the why is the important part. You know, there's a lot of movies I enjoy to varying degrees, but the why is always where the real kind of meat and potatoes comes from. It. So Moana is the 56th animated feature from Disney. It comes in at a running time of 103 minutes. It's directed by two very familiar names to Disney fans, Ron Clements and John Musker. They, of course, were the people behind Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Hercules, Treasure Planet, and Princess and the Frog, which I have heard and I will argue is the beginning of a new renaissance for Disney films, to the point that it got me curious about how Disney animation has improved so much, I feel, in a relatively short amount of time. And Pixar, whom I was always convinced was just a cannot miss, has had some minor hiccups here and there, or a large one in Cars 2. You know, I don't really care how much money a movie made. I care whether or not I think it's good. And I started digging into the numbers of Rotten Tomato scores and how much this movie pulled in, also just because out of curiosity. And I compiled a whole big article. If you head on over to lastgenpodcast.com, that's lastgenpodcast.com, one of the banners that you'll see on our homepage is for the Mouse Telegram. That's our blog entry where Mel does her weekly blog, you know, just covering, you know, just based, you know, Disney news, wrap up of Disney news for the week.
Or sometimes the Melissa and the Mouse, which usually is a food review.
Or a food review or something like that. I finally added something to it, and it's called Walt Disney Animation versus Pixar. Not that there is like a bloodbath between the two of them, but I think that there's a healthy rivalry now, and I think there's a good strong argument to say that Walt Disney Animation has been putting out stronger, more consistent material over the last almost decade than Pixar. And that's not a statement I say very simply. So when you look at it, I kind of deep dive into the numbers. So if you go check it out, I hope you enjoy it. What else is going on here, though? Jared Bush is a screenwriter. He was a co-director and writer of Zootopia. So now on this one, he gets the screenplay credit primarily, which it's interesting. You don't usually see somebody who was a co-director of such a massively popular film, I won't say take a step down, but sort of in a sense. I mean, he didn't direct Moana. And I think that's incredible to show what kind of he wanted to be involved. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't have some ego over Zootopia or whatever. Granted, they've been working on this movie for years, you know, so Zootopia wasn't always something that he could hang his hat on and say, like, hey, look at what I did. You know, he'll have his time on his own projects down the line, I'm positive. But I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it was like he just wanted to tell the story. He didn't care, like, if he was the one who was, you know, in charge of it. He just wanted it to be told, and he wanted to, you know, make sure it got told the proper way. And I think by, you know, the names that wound up being behind it, I don't think he could have asked for a better, you know, crew to help him get his story out.
Yeah, and I mean, he actually spoke at Destination D about, you know, meeting Dwayne Johnson, The Rock.
Yeah.
And basically how he was just the coolest man on earth. And, you know, it's because of, you know, this project that offered him that opportunity. And, you know, that's amazing. The cast on this is pretty interesting. We go from an absolute unknown voicing the lead of Moana in, Olai Cravalho?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Steph told me, Olii. Yeah.
Okay. Olii Cravalho. All right. Yeah, that's pretty close. She voices Moana. And then you have, you know what? I've noticed something though. Luis Bush is the singing voice of young Moana. I could not find out if that's any connection to Jared Bush.
Oh, wow.
But okay, I don't know. I tried to look into it and I couldn't really get any information on it. The name isn't like so distinct that only one response came up.
Right.
So it was kind of hard to track that down. Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, is Maui in this. He's, I would say he's definitely been the focus in the promotion of this film, which as a longtime wrestling fan is the is crazy, but it's kind of awesome. Rachel House is Grandma Tala, who's is Moana's grandmother in this film. Nicole Scherzinger is Sina, who is Moana's mother. Tamora Morrison, who you would probably know best as Django. Not Django.
No, yeah.
Oh, no, it is. I'm thinking of, you know what I'm thinking of? Django, like Tarantino.
Oh.
But yeah, he's Django Fett, you know, from the prequels and whatnot. And his voice is a lot of the animated ones. He's been doing that a couple of times. He is actually Moana's father, but he's not the singing voice for Moana's father.
No, yeah.
Who's the singing voice?
A really cool connection here. The singing voice is Christopher Jackson, who, if you are a big Hamilton fan, and if you are, then you'll love this movie. He played Washington in Hamilton.
Played George Washington in the original cast of Hamilton, and of course Hamilton, written and directed and starring Lin-Manuel Miranda, which easy, we'll get to him soon. Jermaine Clement plays a villain in Tamatoa. And he actually had a big breakthrough in the film What We Do in the Shadows very recently. Alan Tudyk, of course, is here in some form or another. He is Hey. He is a pet rooster in the film. Basically, Alan Tudyk is the John Ratzenberger of Walt Disney Animation now.
Yeah, really?
I think they proudly say that. I don't think there's anything to it.
No.
And for you Steeler fans out there, Troy Polamalu actually plays one of the villagers. Just so you know.
And what was interesting was, as we were looking up all these voice actors, every single one of them, in some shape, way, or form, is came from Oceania, whether it was Hawaii or New Zealand. There were a lot of New Zealanders here. And it's really cool because, like, that's the whole story of Moana is about Oceania. That's that whole area in the Pacific, that what they call all those islands. And I just thought it was really cool that they actually got cast that, you know, their origins were there.
Yeah, because, you know, there's been a lot of things about whitewashing and stuff like that in films. You know, Matt Damon saving China after Tom Cruise saved Japan, you know, a number of years ago and stuff like that. This was nice because it felt very authentic.
Yeah.
Extremely authentic. So we got to talk about the music, though. Obviously, if I don't talk about the music, everyone will kill me. Not that I wasn't going to talk about the music. This is sort of I almost want to say it's a coming out party for Lin-Manuel Miranda, because yes, everyone knows him from Hamilton, but I also feel that now even more people will know him from Moana.
Yeah, because it's not just like, many people are hesitant sometimes to listen to Broadway music without seeing it. And this is kind of like, from young to old, your access to his style of music, his lyrics, his everything. And if you've listened to Hamilton as many times as we have, you'll definitely hear influences of his style in this in Moana soundtrack.
You know when it's something that he penned.
Yeah.
You know it. You know it's something he penned. Yeah, because the reach of Disney is just larger than the reach of Broadway.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, huge for him. I know he just hit 1 million Twitter followers.
And they had 1 million gift party.
Yeah, whatever that means. But he didn't do it alone. And you'd be insane to think that he could on this particular one. And he would never, ever want anyone to think that he did. Mark Mancina was also part of the writing crew for this film. He actually collaborated with Phil Collins on Tarzan. So, and Brother Bear, which I think was also Tarzan, Phil Collins, if I remember correctly. So he already has, you know, a backdrop with Disney, and a successful one, because that soundtrack for Tarzan, that won, you know, the Grammy Award for best soundtrack album. And I'm not sure if he was involved in this specifically, but I mean, I remember Phil Collins won an Oscar for Tarzan that year. Mancina also wrote the current version that you hear during the opening of Disney films for When You Wish Upon a Star, during like the logo part.
Okay.
He put that together.
Oh, cool. cool.
So, I mean, not visually, but I mean, you know, the music-wise. Yeah, so that's something, that's really something of note. He also did soundtracks for films like Speed, Bad Boys, Twister 2. I mean, Twister. And, you know, hey, he got tied up with Twister 2, Cruise Control, which...
Speed.
I've seen it. Speed 2, Cruise Control, which I remember watching that film and the guy yelling out how many knots... The yacht was flying. The cruise ship was flying out as it crashed through a dock. It's a stupid movie, folks. There's really nothing around it. There's just no positives to be had there. And then for a more local take, I'm going to try this the best that I can. Opetaya Fouai was also part of the song-making trio that put this together. He is very popular for being part of a group from the Oceanic. You know, they do Oceanic music and whatnot. And they are called Tevaka. So he is very well known over there. They have evidently, you know, like dominated, you know, like he's very big on the world music charts.
Yeah.
And this and that. And someone who has bought, like, you know, I remember I've bought a number of CDs from the Hawaiian singer Z, which I always just call him Z. I actually don't know his full name. I've never heard of these guys before. And I'm now actually going to seek them out.
Yeah.
Because this music is just really calming and cool, and I love it. I don't know why. There's something about this region. I just feel like the people get it.
Yeah.
Like life. Like they get it. Yeah. Something that we don't in a lot of ways. But let's talk about the movie itself, because
I do think also like that movie touches on that feeling of what you were talking about. Like they get it. Like the movie had that connection with nature and connection with the world, where I feel like at this moment, I would say like only maybe like indigenous people get that, you know, we're so far removed that to take like, you know, a day away from the internet sometimes is like, oh my gosh, like, you know, some people can't do it. Some people do it and are surprised at how much they love it. But, you know, like for people who are just so in touch with nature, like that would be no problem. Because you know what? They find more enjoyment in spending a day walking outside, you know. So I don't know. I really like that aspect of the movie.
But I see, I like it more the fact that they don't, they're not wagging their finger at you, watcher. Because, yeah. I mean, let's talk about some other films, you know. Avatar is basically telling you, like, human bad.
Yeah, no.
Pocahontas is telling you, you know, other people, you know, white people bad, which they were.
Well, yeah.
That's not an argument. But, you know, there are, I like this approach where it's, they have a respect and a love for the land, and there isn't an antagonist who's like, no, murder the land.
Yeah, no.
I mean, well, you could go really far and say something like that, but you know what I mean. Like, there's no... you know, racial oppression or something like that. You know, there's nothing like that.
Yeah, no.
In here, and it doesn't need it.
No.
There's also no love interest in this film.
No, yeah,
and it absolutely doesn't need it, and it's the better for it. They toyed with this in Zootopia and Frozen, and then kind of wilted at the end, because one can say that Rabbit and Fox, Bunny and Fox.
Oh yeah.
Kind of like each other at the end. I think there's obviously like an attraction. They say it. And I think that there's something to be said about like the future of those two characters. Obviously, Anna and...
Kristoff,
you know, they become a thing.
Yeah.
Even though for the most of the film, they didn't really play with that. But they threw it in there at the end.
Yeah.
This one doesn't throw it in the beginning, the middle, or the end.
You know, it was nice to just have a purely, you know... heroine movie without worrying about her relying on some, you know, guy to fall in love with her or anything like that. It was her adventure.
This movie for me basically was what I want, and I had said that this is what I hoped this film was.
Yeah.
and it hit it in all the check boxes.
Yeah.
This is the movie I wanted Brave to be.
Yeah.
I felt that Brave was set up with this incredible atmosphere and this great mythology, and then it became very, very simplified into, my mom's a bear, I have to turn her back. And I understand that there was a bigger meaning behind all that with the tapestry and this and that, but it was, my mom is a bear. And this didn't do that. This let the character drive the film, and it allowed the mythology and the belief of that region to... basically push everything else. Like, it's just the backdrop, and it enriches everything that you feel and that you see in the movie, from the music, from the actual mythology. I mean, like, they heavily researched this thing.
Yeah.
There's a song in it from The Rock called You're Welcome, which I've written this in the group. I think it's the best buddy track since Friend and Me.
Friend Like Me, yeah.
Friend Like Me. And
I agree. It's definitely as catchy also.
Ask me on a day of a week. You know, over time, it might crease. It might go above it just a touch. It might. I don't know. It's very early to call that. But all this stuff that character says, that's based on actual beliefs.
Yeah, that's actually what the character
So it's fun.
Yeah.
I thought this movie was absolutely fantastic.
Same. I mean, as soon as we were done with it, I was, you know, willing to sit through it again. I want to definitely buy it in 3D because just visually it was gorgeous. If you enjoyed the colors of Lilo and Stitch, I would say that this has that kind of feel. You know, you get the very blue of the ocean and the greens for the land, but also like the pinks. And
you get the Polynesian legs too.
Yes.
In Stitch, there's a thing. Like, everyone's got really thick legs, and that stays here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when it's the body shape, it's the body shape.
No, I like it. It's also, I don't know, it just makes me feel like there's a connection in those two films somewhere. Like, there is a Stitch in somewhere in the world of Moana. There's a Stitch running around with Lilo. I would love to see that so much.
We need those commercials back where Stitch would invade the movies. I loved those.
But on that, he wouldn't be invading. They would just be like, oh, hi, Stitch. Yeah. Like, that would be the great. Like, if they ran it like he was invading, but the final one was Moana, and it's not. He's not invading. He's just like, he's just on vacation.
Yeah, he's just hanging out.
And they're all
out.
Aware of him. You know, they just know him completely. Like, I can see Maui and Stitch on the road.
Him and Hey Hey.
That would be really good. You know what? Let's talk about Hey Hey for a second. Hey Hey is a sidekick character. You know, you've seen him. He's the chicken in the trailers. Sidekick characters for me can always be pretty hit or miss. Disney's been, they've been on a streak lately, though. I've enjoyed all of them. This one's really great. And we learned of the, what's the word I'm looking for?
The backstory?
Not the backstory, but the
creative process?
Yeah, the way that he changed. I can't think of the word.
Metamorphosis?
Okay.
Let me just keep saying random things.
Yeah, no, just stop, because he'll never remember the word.
Sorry.
The evolution of the character from being very snarky and very mean-spirited to just becoming the dumbest character they've ever created. And not that Woody wound up being the dumbest character, but it's another interesting thing where they originally were going to have like a snarky character, and they decided, you know, there's just nothing redeeming enough for me to care about this thing. We should just get him out of the movie. And Woody went through the same transformation, but he became, you know, Woody. He didn't become the stupidest cowboy on earth. But this character went through a complete 180 in its creation, and it works. And the film needs it needs comedy, because Moana is not telling jokes like herself.
No, not for the most part.
You know, she's not really telling jokes, and Maui is, but there is a slapstick element then added with this character of Hey Hey, and I really enjoyed it. And every time I see characters like this, my brain says, ugh, God, I guess, yeah. But then when I see it play out, I'm like, oh, it really does work.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you were talking about how Maui makes jokes, but Hey Hey's also, like, the comedy. It's almost like Aladdin, where you have, you know, Robin Williams, who's hysterical and making his jokes, but then you also have Iago, who's pretty funny also.
Yeah, yeah. I would put Hey Hey way above. Then again, that thing when he's stuck in the door.
Jafar,
yeah, that's really, that part makes me laugh so hard every time I see it.
Yeah.
If I had a complaint about this movie, and there's not many, but there's one, but it is sort of important. This is a 107 minute film, 103. So it's an hour and 43 minutes. It's not a lot of time. It's the right amount of time. Thing is, though, they repeat a specific story beat twice.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, oh, that again. We know when it happens, and after we say, like, hey, spoilers, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
But when they hit the story beat repeat button, I was sort of like, oh, all right. You know, we can move on.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen this already, and I guess we're going to get it again, just to a higher degree.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't feel different enough to not make me notice it, basically. Yeah. You know, because if I didn't notice it, then great. I mean, are you aware of what I'm referring to? I believe
you
are.
Yeah, and I felt the same way. Because it was quick in succession, I noticed it, but it also resolved itself quickly enough that I was able to get over it.
You're right, though. It did. It happened twice very quickly, like almost within 10, 15 minutes of each other.
Yeah.
And that's why maybe it's like stuck with me so much. I was like, oh, didn't I just see this?
Yeah.
But beyond that, just going on to the positives, there's no more animation difference right now between Pixar quality and Walt Disney Animation quality.
No.
This film is a screensaver in many ways. It's absolutely unbelievable to look at. The music is my favorite soundtrack since Princess and the Frog, which I guess I have a thing with Musker and Clement. This is definitely my favorite soundtrack since then, and I will... I do like the villain song better in Pyre, in Princess, but man, the one in here is good.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was like, there's no villain song, but now I realized which one it was. Yeah.
It's really good.
It is really good. And it actually uses similar elements from Princess and the Frog.
Well, I mean, no, the style of music is
No, I'm not totally talking about the music. I'm just talking about in the animation with the black lighting. Yeah,
the black light. I thought of that, too, when we were watching it. There was some black light. I was like, oh, okay, okie dokie.
Which, how crazy is that they do black light in animation?
Like, why not?
I think that's so cool.
But there's actually, if you get a chance to pick up the deluxe version of the soundtrack, we're talking about the song Shiny. That doesn't ruin anything. The song Shiny has a demo on it by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and he is 100% channeling David Bowie. David Bowie, you know, Labyrinth-esque, you know, it's basically Jareth, and it's really cool. It's really, really cool. He, you know, there's a couple of tracks where it's just him doing the demos on them as he, you know, was putting them together and whatnot, and I don't know, I think the deluxe is like $2 extra, and you get like 15 or 16 extra tracks. Just get the deluxe,
so worth
guys.
It.
So, had a great pace to it, though. Outside of that little hiccup, I felt I really liked the ending. I liked the way that they handled concluding the task at hand.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that was coming.
Okay, I didn't. So.
Oh, okay. But you know what? How about this? Let's just say, for me, this is... Yeah, this is the best one that they've put out since this restart for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's this and Princess and the Frog right on top of each other. And then I would say Frozen, because I really do like Frozen. But
I like Frozen too, but man, Big Hero 6 I really like.
Well, you know what?
It's also more for me. I mean, like Big Hero 6 is, you know, I am, well, I guess I'm really not, well, with my mentality, I am the audience.
Yeah.
You know?
But just... You know what always gets it for me is the songs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so if I was going to take the whole package, it would be those three movies and then Big Hero 6, 100%.
Okay.
But yeah, and this one is top.
Meanwhile,
right now.
Zootopia is incredible.
Yeah, I know. It's like...
That's the thing. Like, they've hit a point now where it's that Pixar argument. It's that early stage... Not early stage. It went on for like more than a decade. It's that Pixar argument where you're like, what's your favorite Pixar film? I don't know, 6 of them?
Yeah.
Like, how, you know, what day of the week is it? And I'll give you a different answer, you know?
Well, it was like, we had that discussion on your post with your article, and it was kind of like, I came up with a great metaphor, so I want to repeat it here.
Okay.
Just pat myself on the back a little bit. No, I'm just joking. But no, it's like grading diamonds, you know? Like, they're all priceless jewels that are amazing to look at, and each one, you know, will cause somebody else to be in awe of it. But, you know, there's a grading system and there's quality and
there's always flaws.
There's always, one or two. Yeah. And then, you know, but the best one, I mean, but they're all still worth more than the grain of sand. So, I mean, there's so
grain of sand things. Being Minions.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's
they're dust.
Yeah. Nothing. So
So spoilers?
But yeah, this is look, if you haven't seen Moana yet, there's zero reason that you're listening to this show with this title of the show and you shouldn't go see this movie. Go see it, enjoy it. Take it in, guys, cuz look, there was a dark period between 1995 and 2008. I really made a really big chart about it. But there was a long time when Disney wasn't exactly hitting their mark, and they have rebounded to such an extent. I don't know what did it. I mean, John Lasseter coming in and becoming the chief creative officer in 06 had a big, impact. And obviously films take like 4 or 5 years to produce. So even the stuff that came out in 06 and 07, even 08, you can say that he had some influence on it, but not enough. But if you've noticed, ever since then, things have been kind of going really well. So all hail Lasseter right now. You know, he is our generation for Disney. He's our Walt Disney.
Yeah.
You know, that's really what's up.
So we need to figure out the new word for Renaissance. Like they had like the golden age, the silver, but then like they had the Renaissance. So like, I don't know what the next
Lasseter age.
But that's not an art term. We need to
Doesn't matter. He is an art term. He brought digital animation into everyone's, in front of everyone. That was not a thing until, that anyone really cared about until Toy Story hit screens.
Yeah.
And he has ushered in that new digital. I mean, I guess it would be the digital age. This is the golden digital age. I don't know. But they're still hand drawing on computers. It's interesting. It's a lot of different things. But for me, this is the Lasseter age. That's what it comes down to. It's that dude. I just wish he would stop making Cars films. I just don't really get it. That Cars 3 trailer is the strangest damn thing I've ever seen.
There was a great mashup of that trailer being shown. And you know that gif of that guy who's like reacting to stuff? I don't know.
There's a lot of
I know
those.
That's a very... Yeah. But yeah, if you saw it, you would know what it was. But it's just him like sitting in the audience with his mouth agape and like reacting and as the trailer's playing. It's pretty good.
If you haven't seen the Cars 3 trailer yet, check it out. And I don't know. Wonder if Zack Snyder is doing Cars 3. All right. We're going to go into spoilers now. So not much, because I don't really think there's much to spoil. I just wanted to talk about a couple of key things. So spoilers, if you haven't seen it, go see it. You're great. We'll see you next week. I don't know what we're doing next week, but it'll be fun. And have a nice night. Now we're going into spoiler territory in 3, 2, 1. All right. Spoilers. Kakamora. The little coconuts?
Yeah.
That was weird. That was a scene, and then they were never seen from again.
It was just like a fun little, like, I want to put this in, so it's getting put in.
I know, but it seemed like filler. But I loved the scene, but I kept waiting for them to come back.
Yeah, I didn't know if they were supposed to be like, this is part of a myth part of it.
I have to look it up. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I thought that was interesting. The thing that we were referring to before is, with the kind of the repeated beat, was there are two instances where our heroes are basically like, I can't do this. And they semi-walk away, and then they come back together. It happens twice in pretty quick succession.
Yeah.
And it just felt like we were retreading the same exact ground of Maui doesn't believe in himself. Wait, Maui believes in himself. Maui doesn't believe in himself. Wait, Maui believes in himself. You can't argue that second one is Maui believes in Moana.
Yeah.
And that's what brings him back. And I can maybe make an own argument for myself that that's what's going on. But it felt very familiar in a short film where there's not a whole lot of plot and it doesn't need it.
No.
But that felt very repeatable to me.
It was just because
at that,
like,
moment.
Yeah, after the first one, they go through that montage of, okay, now I believe in you, now I'm gonna, train you how to do something, and like we're gonna like do all this stuff together, and yeah, it's gonna go great. And then it's like, nope, one thing happens wrong and we're back again. Like,
yeah, and then we had another training sequence almost.
Yeah, so it was a little weird in that aspect. But overall, I thought, that was the only weird thing, but it kept the pace up where it kind of let it go by quickly and not having to, like, it didn't slow the film down, is what I'm trying to say.
No, it didn't for me either. It just made me pause for a minute.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the final scene. Not the final scene, but, like, the final climactic battle versus T'Kaa. Ka, which is basically the lava.
Yeah.
The lava monster. Now, we learn in the beginning of the film that Tafiti was the island that Maui stole that jewel from.
I think her heart, yeah.
The heart. The heart of the island, right? Was that what it was called?
Yeah, because she's basically the one that gives life to all the islands, so she's the creator. So by stealing her heart, he wanted to give that gift of creation to humans, because that was basically like his thing. He was like, you know how like Greek mythology, there's a lot of the
Prometheus,
yeah, Prometheus and stuff that give, you know, humans gifts, whether it's fire or creation or things like that. So that was basically Maui's job.
Fire good, Kimosabe.
So he was trying to do that for humans, and it kind of didn't go so well, because then we get Ka, the villain that, you know, knocks him for a loop.
Yes, literally twice, the same punch. Learn how to duck. But we first off, you never saw that SNL skit with with Tonto and Frankenstein and Tarzan?
No.
It's kind of classic. Okay. We learn that Ka and Tafiti are the same, or one and the same.
Yeah, it's
that Tafiti turned into Ka once the jewel was stolen. And it's supposed to be a reveal at the end, but I felt like that was kind of, I don't know. It wasn't obvious. I don't think they were trying to pull like an M. Night Shyamalan thing on you. But it didn't bother me that I knew that, though. Like, it had no impact on my interest. I was actually really interested in how Moana would figure it out.
Yeah, because I didn't figure it out. Like, thinking about it now, it makes sense, because, yeah, you have like creation and death, the flip coins of each other.
And it happens one right after the other, you know?
Yeah, but like, you just think like, oh, everybody wants this jewel. Obviously, a monster would want the jewel. Like, okay, it makes sense to think it's something completely different. But yeah, and then to have her figure out like, oh, okay, this is how I'm going to convince this monster who's on like a, you know, destruction path to not destroy me.
Yeah. Cause you know, when she basically goes over the, you know, goes through the, gets, you know, past the blockade of fire and stuff. And she's like, oh, it's not here.
Yeah.
You know, like the island is gone. And then she puts together like, oh, that's the island right there.
Yeah.
You know, in the form of Ka. But I thought it was great, because it was another film followed up by Doc Strange, where the quote-unquote the climactic boss battle, our hero doesn't throw a punch. I mean, yeah. Maui does. But in the overall, to ultimately quell it, there's no punch thrown. And this one was, again, like bringing that whole theme of caring for the land and, you know, being connected with all of it. It ties it all together. And Moana is the one who sees through all of it and is the one who ultimately makes the greatest connection with the land that you possibly could in this film, in this setting.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great. And yes, it reminded me of lava.
Yeah.
A lot. kind of a lot. But I just absolutely loved the ending. I just thought it was beautifully done.
Yeah. So, I mean, I loved so much of the movie. The visuals were great. I mean, the animation on Ka, like just the molten parts.
The water animation was gorgeous. Incredible.
And I think one of my favorite parts had to be the once her grandmother passed away, that whole, you know, the island going dark and like that kind of like air whoosh, and then her coming out as the manta ray. The animation on the manta ray, the glowing, it was just gorgeous.
So if you guys listened to the show that we had earlier this week with Panda, I made a reference to, or Panda brought it up, I don't remember who brought it up initially, that I had noticed at Destination D, there was a storyboard up on the big screen. Like, they were showing you, like, here's some production stills, and this is how we storyboard out our story. Well, one of the story cards that were titling the scenes, it said in big black marker, Tala's death.
Good thing I can't see very far.
And like, I remember reading that and I'm going, I mean, yeah, I guess that's an obvious move, but why is that there? Like, why wouldn't anyone think? But that was what it was. That was the moment that I had already known about, and not because I watched a trailer or anything, but because the screenwriter had a slideshow and it was right there in front of me.
Yeah.
So that was the moment that was quote unquote spoiled for me. But there we were on that one.
Yeah, but I did like, you know, there were some themes, especially in the beginning, that were very heavy. You know, since we've been going back through our Disney movies, we've seen the whole, you know, don't leave home theme again and again. And that was very prevalent in this this movie, especially in the beginning, it wasn't so much.
But it's not validated.
Well,
no, because she leaves the island and successfully does stuff, and then like she returns home, but they take to the seas again.
No, yes, yes. I'm saying, I mean, it was validated in that her father had a valid reason for wanting that. Like, he had the traumatic experience and he wanted to save his people, especially his daughter, from ever having that same experience. So like, I feel like he had good intentions, but obviously they weren't the best intentions for it. Wasn't the best plan for everybody.
Yeah, but my point is, if this movie came out in the 50s and Walt produced it,
she would have failed terribly. Yeah.
She would have accomplished something, but she ultimately would have come to the conclusion that I should never leave home again.
Yeah.
You know, like, that would have been the thing that she would have learned, or a side character would have done that. I guess maybe Pua does in this one, which I was surprised. You know, they made, I feel like the pig, the little cute pig, was a big thing.
Yeah.
Not really very big in the movie. In a very, very tiny amount. Hey is really the thing.
Yeah, well, it was funny because there was that one trailer from Moana where it was Moana and Pua the pig, and they were sitting like around a fire, and Maui was like being like, oh, this is Maui, you know.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
And that scene did not happen in the movie,
that's right,
at all.
She never meets... She never meets Maui with Pua.
No, I know, but that was like a night scene, and they didn't meet at night, and yeah, it was really interesting.
They must have just done it as a promotional bit, or you know, something when they were working on it.
Yeah.
So that is our views on Moana. I think it's an absolute home run. I think it's another fantastic output from this studio, and I can't wait for the next one. But I'm going to go see this one again and enjoy it and take it all in for what it is. An absolute success. I think this movie is going to make well over $1 billion.
Yeah, and I can't wait for them to start like putting it more in the parks, because if they put that song in the parks, I'm going to start crying again. The one, what's that name of it, where they're out on the water?
You're welcome.
No, not that one.
It's the You're Welcome song.
It's not that one.
I Am Moana?
No, we are together.
We are together. Shush. Even if I could bring it up, I wouldn't. I just want you to keep trying. I can't believe I have to look this up. We Know the Way? Where You Are?
No. We Know the Way. One. Yeah.
That's the one from the trailer.
Yeah, and it's like the one when they show, you know, everybody on the ships and stuff like that. And
yeah,
it's
the finish of the film.
It's again at the end. Yeah, no, that one got me so many times.
Absolutely great. I hope everyone goes out. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you have a good holiday. I don't know when you're listening to this, but this is coming out early Thanksgiving morning. So I hope you have a good holiday. We'll be back with you next week. My travel schedule. Oh, I know what we're going to do next week. I don't know when it's going to come out. Brian's going to be visiting. And we're going to figure something out while we're walking around in the parks or something like that. So next week might be a very off-the-cuff, odd episode, a very loose episode, but it'll be fun. We have some reviews to read, though, don't we?
We do.
Huzzah. Go ahead.
So being thankful for our fans, thankful for the three of you who went on and gave us our 5-star review. We have Dixie, 1971. These guys are bad asses.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice. Simply put, awesome podcast. Save them up and listen to them back to back to back on our road trip. Next one in this. I'm sorry, I can't read. Next one is this coming weekend on our way to WDW for Thanksgiving. Awesome.
Oh, cool.
Looking forward to listening to you debate and poke fun at Mel. Of course, my favorite part. You guys rock like early to mid 80s Van Halen. Never stop bringing it.
Wow. All right.
That's a reference for you. I didn't listen to Van Halen. Sorry. Kimbo rocks. Insert creative Disney title. Love it.
Wait, what was that? Say that again.
Insert creative Disney title.
Oh, well done. Well done.
And our last one is from Matt R. Great discussion of Disney films, Disney parks, and I don't know if there's more, but it got cut off because their iTunes doesn't like us. It just says .. It says Disney.
Oh, gotcha. On
the title, yeah. These guys bring a different take than most Disney podcasts, making DMH one of the best out there. Thank you. A very involved community exists around the podcast, which DMH has recently incorporated into the show via the Q&A segment. Great addition. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. Oh, and just a final note, the whole Kakamora scene, I leaned over to you and I said Mad Max.
Yeah.
That's on purpose.
Cool.
Yeah, the Fury Road thing is intentional.
Nice.
So, little note there. All right, guys, that's going to be it for us this week. This episode, as usual, and thankfully, was brought to you by MEI Travel. Head on over there, guys, meitravel.com. Becky and her team can set you up on whatever travel need you have. And take a vacation. You earned it, all right? Good. 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 Don't come here during Thanksgiving, though. It is a madhouse. Who are we, though? We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. Over on Facebook, if you search for Disney Magic Hour, you can join our group. Head on over to iTunes. Leave a 5-star review. We need your reviews. Very, very much so. Mel, as she just did now, will read them live on the air. We are also available at Google Music Play. And at soundcloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And on Instagram, you can find us at
Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
All right, guys. Have a good Thanksgiving. Take care. We'll see you next week. Till next week, say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Pete.
And thank you.